They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, listening audience and adoring fans, to Magellan's at the Movies. I'm your host, as always, Nathan Mogulyines, joined by my brother, Elliot Mogulyines. Elliot, there's some pieces of movie news. Firstly, I'm assuming you haven't seen the Alien Earth trailer?
Nope.
All right, well, I didn't want to banter about that. It's not, like, it's barely a teaser, so it's irrelevant. But I did want to get your thoughts on some of these movies. I think earlier today or yesterday, Netflix unveiled their the movies that are going to be releasing on the platform in 2025. And so I wanted your thoughts on some of these films. The first one is Guillermo del Toro's adaptation of Frankenstein.
Are we going to do every single one of them?
We're not going to do all of them. I'm only going to do the ones that I actually think there's a chance you might be interested in or have thoughts on.
Well, I'm very interested in that, partly because, well, I would say mostly because I love Frankenstein, the book. And also, I'm quite certain that one of these days, Del Toro is just going to hit it out of the park for me. I mean, I liked... Nightmare Alley quite a bit, but a lot of the other stuff of his that I've seen I haven't really loved, but hope springs eternal.
Yeah, I think it's pretty exciting. I think they unveiled one image from it, which is just Oscar Isaac as Frankenstein standing in like an old-fashioned lecture hall.
I did see that.
Oh, we'll see. There you go. So I'm pretty excited for it. I think I like Del Toro movies a little bit more than you. I'm a fan of Pan's Labyrinth, and Pacific Rim is a crazy good movie. Some of the other ones, Noah Baumbach is going to be back releasing another... Funny. Another movie with Netflix. Elliot, I know you've watched quite a few of his films on Netflix, maybe all of his films on Netflix. Are you excited about this? Are you a big enough Noah Baumbach fan to be excited?
Sure. Yeah. I wouldn't say that I'm over, like, I'm just beside myself with that news, but I have enjoyed, to some extent, all of the movies of Noah Baumbach that I've watched. They've always seemed like... with the exception of Marriage Story, which is a little heavier, they always seem like kind of light, breezy, just funny, quirky. That's how I would describe them. They're it's a bit like they're a bit like Coen Brothers movies if the Coen Brothers were less interested in the darker aspects of their stories.
Or if the Coen brothers had a bit of a bone to pick with their father.
Or that.
Anyway, yeah, it's only described as a heartbreaking comedy, which feels like you could describe most of his movies that way, so that's not much. Catherine Bigelow, her next movie.
Absolutely.
Coming
excited.
To Netflix.
I am beside myself about that one.
And I think the last one is Rian Johnson's next Knives Out movie.
Oh, Lord. No, not excited.
I'm excited for the Catherine Bigelow one, regardless of what ends up. Like, it's called Untitled Catherine Bigelow Movie, and that's all you need to get
that's
my butt
need.
In the seat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wake Up Dead Man, the next Knives Out movie, I'm excited for it. I didn't like... Well, we have a review for Glass Onion up, so if you want our full thoughts, you can just listen to that. I didn't love it, but I didn't, like, I think it was just... I think every time Rian Johnson makes a new movie, it feels like he's trying to do something interesting and new, so I'm always going to show up for a director who's trying to do that. And I think this one looks, just from the images and stuff, looks like it might be going in a different direction than Glass Onion, which I think is good. So I'm excited for it.
I feel like Rian Johnson is the quintessential modern movie director in that I find his movies are often doing a lot of demolition without actually constructing anything. Like, they're just, they're subverting tropes and turning expectations on their head and stuff, but that's kind of, like, all they have going for them. They don't really have an identity of their own outside of what they exist in opposition to.
Well, I don't think that's entirely true. I think Last Jedi and the first Knives Out are trying, they are genuinely making an attempt to say something meaningful or to do something novel inside of their subversion and such stuff like that. And even that, like, I do think that critique is somewhat true for Glass Onion, that it feels like a movie that's crippled by its own desire to be smarter than the audience, and then it, like, in doing so, it goes down a path that is so stupid that it feels similar to Saltburn, that it's trying so hard to be neat and cute that it stops trying to be, like, good and clever.
Well, but I don't know. I don't like it. Not here for it. I like Looper well enough, though.
I haven't seen Looper, so.
Well, you should watch it. It's pretty good. I did want to also mention that last night, while I was perusing the YouTubes, as an ad, I got a trailer for Sinners, Ryan Coogler's movie. And I had not know. I mean, I knew this was the thing, but I had not sought out much information about it. But dang, I gotta say, that trailer was not bad at all. I was like, by the end, because I watched the whole thing, because it really hooked me, and by the end, I was like, wow, kind of like to see that.
I think it looks neat. I think, if anything, it looks very original, which is in short supply if you're looking at only mainstream sort of films, which is what Rian Coogler has kind of been operating in. So, yeah, I think it looks neat. But anyway, that's enough about movies that are coming out in the future. Let's talk about a movie that's come out a while, like over 2 decades ago, almost at this point. Right?
It came out in 2008, so you're about 3 years off.
That's not much, rounding up. But anyway, Elliot, you chose this movie. I don't know if it needs much introduction, but why'd you pick it? Let's jump in here.
Yeah, you're right. This movie needs no introduction. It's Iron Man 2008. This is a movie directed by Jon Favreau. This is the rock upon which the Church of Marvel is built. Or, actually, not really. It would be more accurate to say that this is the seed from which the Marvel Universe grew. And the odds of you having not seen it or being broadly unfamiliar with its plot are limited. But in case you do not know, it tells the story of Iron Man. His origin story, Iron Man being a Marvel comic book character. So it tells the story of his being a nasty, nasty weapons manufacturing industrialist. And his journey into becoming a gold-hearted weapons industrialist who just makes weapons for himself personally, that he pinky promises to not use to ill effect. But anyway, so that's the movie. There's not a whole lot to it. And I chose this movie because I have made no secret of my escalating antipathy for Marvel. It's been a long time, so I guess I can't be escalating if I'm not experiencing it. But my antipathy for Marvel that moved me to stop watching Marvel movies for the last, like, 3 years or so. And I wanted to go back to the beginning, back to where it all started, to see how it was. Is it at all different? Because, I mean, there are 17 years worth of evolving cultural and filmic tastes and styles between us and this movie. So, yeah, I just wanted to see how it's changed, if it's changed, and if it's as good as everyone says it is, because this is a very popular movie. It did super well for itself at the box office, really well critically. It's on tons of best of lists. Audiences love it. Critics love it. The question, Nathan, is do we love it? I'm not even going to bother going over my history with this movie. I watched this movie when I was a kid, just like everyone else did. And yeah. And I'm just going to jump right in. I'm just going to come right out and say it. I thought this movie was pretty good.
Wow.
I didn't hate it. I would even say I liked it more than I was expecting to. I didn't love it. That's for sure. And it's definitely simple. It's definitely light. It's definitely a little bit weightless at times. And in the moments where it tries to reach for more personal drama or emotional stakes, it falls flat. But it's an entertaining movie with a likable star, a really strong performance by Robert Downey Jr. And I was surprised at how much I enjoyed some of the action sequences, which were not at all the kind of just meaningless punching fests that Marvel would become known for. So that's my position going into this discussion. Nathan, I'm very interested to hear what you have to say.
I feel like I'm in a really similar place to you. I think, well, and I do also want to say, I know you skipped over talking about our history with this movie, but I seem to remember never going out of my way to see this movie. I feel like I saw this movie like 9 times, and all 9 of those times were because it was being shown on FX, and like it was just on and dad was watching it or something. So I feel like this is one of the few times that I have sought out this movie. And yeah, I think for a lot of the reasons that you said, I've kept a little bit more up to date with the Marvel movies than you have. I did see Eternals. I think the only Marvel movie I haven't seen is The Marvels.
That's the best one.
I know. See, this is what I'm worried about, is maybe it is the best one and I'm missing out. I'm not watching the best one. I'd be surprised if that was the best one, but I felt like this movie was just like a huge breath of fresh air in comparison to those movies, for all the reasons that you said. There's a much greater, I don't know if there's a greater reliance on practical effects or the special effects just look better. I think it's probably a combination of the two. There's also much fewer things requiring special effects in this movie. And yeah, this is, I think every character in long-running franchises runs the risk of flanderization, which is when a character's kind of defining characteristics become larger and larger than life until they almost become a parody of themselves, in reference to Ned Flanders in The Simpsons becoming more and more, you know, stupid and silly as the show went on, as well as most of The Simpsons characters becoming dumber and dumber as the show went on. And I think going back to this movie, it's really fun to see back when not every character was trying to think of a funny little quip in the middle of serious sequences. Back when, like, Iron Man was a really strong, well-established character and not just something, you know, someone who things happen to. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this movie quite a bit as well.
Well, great. We are in agreement. That does not happen every week.
That's true.
So let's definitely go ahead and start with the good. Iron Man himself. Nathan, you've talked before, or I've mentioned before that you've talked before about Sarah Haley Finn.
Or oh Haley Finn?
I'm not
Haley.
Sure.
Sarah Haley Finn.
Yes, the casting director for the Marvel Universe at large. So the one responsible for some pretty out there picks, like Robert Downey Jr. for Iron Man. I believe at the time was not, like, his career was not at the place where he was positioned for a role like this. So credit to Sarah and credit to Robert Downey Jr. because I think he does a great job. He really slides very easily into the jerk parts of Tony Stark. The narcissism, the grandiosity. I think that the movie gets a little more shaky when it is trying to, when it's trying to make him a bit more serious, trying to make him, I don't know, trying to flesh him out, basically. But we're talking about what we do like, and I think that I really like Tony Stark. I really like the fragility that Robert Downey Jr. sometimes brings to the character. Like those moments when, for example, Obadiah Stane... by the way, I completely forgot that Jeff Bridges had been in a Marvel movie. When he showed up, I was like, wow, Jeff Bridges in a Marvel movie. And then I was like, oh, wait, this was the first one. That's insane. But yeah, when Obadiah Stane says that he was the one who had tried to push Tony out of the CEO spot, Robert Downey Jr. just really sells a look of betrayal, of stunned betrayal. And those are the moments that I think really ground him and really make him a likable character. Those moments in juxtaposition with his more snide, snotty, devil may care, rich guy with daddy issues. So yeah, I know that I've been like all over the place in this analysis, but I think that Tony Stark, I liked him in this movie, and I thought that Robert Downey Jr. did a really good job.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I will jump on again to say Sarah Haley Finn, like, incredible. There's so many casting decisions in the MCU that when they were announced, I mean, a lot of these people were nobodies, Chris Hemsworth, Tom Hiddleston, or they were well known for roles that were distinctly different. For, like, Chris Pratt, who was nothing like Star-Lord, or at least did not do much to make you believe that he could be a superhero in Parks and Recreation, his most famous role before that. So I think it's really amazing that one person did so, like, was in charge of so many castings that have just panned out so amazingly, and also Terrence Howard in this movie. But that wasn't her fault. He asked for more money in the sequel. That's like, you know, she couldn't.
Oh my gosh,
have known
the absolute nerve.
I know, more money to come back for a role that, you know, made this movie a bunch of money. Anyway, but yeah, Robert Downey Jr. was one of those picks, like you mentioned, Elliot. He was not a bankable star at the time. In fact, I believe he had recently come off of fairly high profile arrests and drug problems. And so this was an out there pick. And I think he, firstly, does an amazing job in this movie. He is giving a really, really good performance, I think, for all the reasons that you said, that he really nails the classic sort of playboy rich man-child role at the beginning of the movie. And he really sells this arc of someone very naive getting their first glimpse at the larger world and then trying to fix it, like, or trying to do what they can to fix it. I thought the scenes of him and Jensen in the cave were really compelling and did a lot to sell me on this character arc that Iron Man was about to go on. And I kind of love that. I know this is a bit of a trope, a little bit, although it hasn't been done to this extent. I like that he gets his Iron Man suit, and then, like, the first problem that he sees on the news, he's like, heck, I'll fly around the world and try to fix that thing. I'll go and try and take care of that. I just think it's really, you know, compelling. You really are rooting for Tony. You want him to get better. You want him to, you know, become the superhero. He doesn't have he doesn't have the classic superhero setup where his father figure dies or someone dies. And I mean, I guess Jensen dies, but I don't feel like he's a good person because Jensen died. I think he's gonna be a good person, and then Jensen also dies. So I think Robert Downey Jr. does an amazing job, and I think if you watching this movie, it's really easy to see why they made Iron Man the linchpin of the MCU, and, you know, why these movies have kind of been floundering ever since his death in Avengers Endgame. Spoilers for Endgame.
Oh man.
Yeah, sorry, Elliot. But, you know, he's incredibly compelling, he's incredibly likable, and most of that is down to Robert Downey Jr.'s performance.
Yeah, that's probably a little further than I would go. I wouldn't attach incredibly to either of those words, but that's just me personally. And we will get into negatives later, but for now, let's keep the good times rolling. Because I want to talk about the action sequences, which is not just when people are fighting, but sequences like the first flight. Actually, I think that's the only action sequence that doesn't have people fighting in it. Yeah. So just like the action sequences, because I thought they were really good. None of them were quite the same. The first one obviously was the Mark One suit, which is just a hodgepodge of technology. So it's very clunky, it's imperfect. And then the next one, the Mark Two, is sleek. And I gotta say, the suit does look very cool.
The suit looks sick. Yeah.
So when he goes to Golmadia after the world's most overwrought documentary, he is just like basically screaming down the camera, "We need a superhero now!" That one, he's a little bit more on his feet, and it's showing off the many capabilities of the suit, like the missiles and the repeller beams, or I don't know.
Repulsor blasts.
Yeah. And his flares. And my favorite thing about it is how they all come together in the last confrontation between Iron Man and Ironmonger, who's not the best villain in any way.
Hey.
But don't even try to defend Ironmonger, Nathan. Yeah, this final confrontation I thought was great. Because a lot of the stuff that's been established in action sequences up until this point come back in really clever ways. Like, it's not that just mindless punching that so much of superhero cinema has become. Iron Man is actually thinking to get out of these situations. Like, he uses his knowledge of the icing problem, as he calls it, to get himself some breathing room. And he uses the flares when he's, like, in the bear hug of death. So, I just thought that was really good. I think that probably the peak of my enjoyment was in this last confrontation, where it was much less bombastic than I was expecting or remembered. It was a lot more clever. There was a lot more thought put into it. I thought that the action sequences, especially the last one, were really well constructed. They were probably my favorite parts of the movie.
I 100% agree. This is another area where the movie feels like a breath of fresh air. And, like, I think sometimes we can overgeneralize that not every MCU movie ends with two identical characters having a meaningless fight until one of them just beats them. Some of them do, cough, cough, Black Panther. But, I think this movie is a really good example of exciting action scenes. What are you laughing at, Elliot?
That was just a bit of a delayed reaction about that.
I was waiting for you to laugh.
Controversial, Nathan.
I was waiting for you to laugh at my joke. I had to pause for audience laughter.
Oh, sorry. I don't know why it took me so long to, like, register what you had said. But that's great, Nathan. That's topical. That'll really boost our numbers, I think.
I'm just saying it did happen. That was just the one
that
came. It
did happen. No, you're right.
Like, that's to it. My
that
mind,
is
fast.
What happened, that is an accurate representation of the finale of Black Panther.
Anyway, this movie, all of the action scenes are really good. And again, I don't know if it's because there's less special effects or they just put more effort into the special effects or there's more practical effects. Whatever it is, the action sequences look great. The Iron Man suit looks really great and tactile and look like something that you could really, you know, grab and feel, as opposed to the CGI blob that the Iron Man suit kind of becomes as these movies progress. And yeah, that final fight with the Ironmonger, which is, you know, such a great villain, such a great classic villain that we all love from the comics that we read as a kid, is really great because Ironmonger is clearly bigger and stronger than Iron Man, so he has to use his intelligence. It's a great finale. It's really fun to watch him come up with ways to evade Ironmonger. And yeah, all of the action sequences are just, you know, really good.
Well, good.
That's
glad
masterful,
you agree.
Masterful film criticism, by the way. It's really good. Dude,
that is.
Trust
I think
me.
That's, I think that's in Roger Ebert's review of this movie.
He did actually review this movie. I don't know
if
that's
and he gave
joke.
It a 4 out of 4.
He really liked it. He did also say the movie's funny, but maybe if there's too much humor, it could go over. He has at least one really prescient line about, like,
oh, really?
The quips are funny, but if there was more of them, I think I'd be annoyed.
If a movie in this franchise is ever directed by the Russo brothers, I feel like things could kind of get out of control. How did you know, Roger?
Dude, he's a visionary.
Yeah, I just want to run through a few other strengths for me. All of the performances, including RDJ, I felt were very strong. Jeff Bridges, I can't believe you're here, but he definitely sells the menace and the obsequious friendliness of Obadiah Stane for as not great as the writing for his character is. I think he is putting in an effort. And also the thing about the pizza was really funny. Of, I'm going to keep this pizza. Here, take a slice. Take two. That was really funny. I was surprised at how much I don't even know why, but I really enjoyed Coulson in this movie.
Oh my goodness.
Maybe it's just because it's been so long since I've seen him that I just liked his unflappable but still mildly hassled energy that he was giving off.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just liked it. And also, it was crazy for me to hear a Marvel movie soundtrack that has like a motif and isn't just aimless horns all the time.
Wow. Those are interesting thoughts. I agree. Jeff Bridges is doing a really good job of being very intimidating. I don't necessarily think of Jeff Bridges as like a scary, he's not someone who comes to my mind as like, yeah, he's a terrifying actor, but the scene with him and Pepper where she's hacking into his computer, it's scary. Like he sounds very intimidating. You know, he a far cry from the dude, in my opinion. Yeah, Coulson is great. It's easy to see why Coulson...
What are you doing in my office, Pepper? This aggression will not stand, man.
It's really easy to see why Coulson became such a big part of Phase 1 of the MCU. Again, in the same way that it's easy to see why Iron Man was so well-loved. Because Clark Gregg is super likable and fun in this role. He's funny every time he shows up. He seems like a little frustrated that they're not taking him as seriously as he would like. But him at the end, when he's doing stuff, it's really fun. I did also, kind of on your note about Obadiah Stane's little thing about the pizza, I really liked the dialogue in this movie. Apparently, they did not write very much dialogue for the film. So the actors were ad-libbing much of the scenes. And I think, like, there's no other MCU movie like this because the characters, especially near the beginning of the movie, are, like, talking over each other. They're constant. Like, it felt like almost like watching an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is another... I know Curb Your Enthusiasm is largely improv. And it just feels really, like, realistic and different in a way that I found to be very fun, that it was fun listening to all of these little quips that were being thrown out. Not quips in, like, a, you know, the bad guy dies and, oh, that just happened, but quips in, yeah, like a, you know, I'm keeping the pizza, take a piece, hey, take two. You know, just silly things that real people do in real life just to try and, you know, make their friends laugh or something. So I really like that. I found it to be really realistic and fun to listen to their dialogue. And yeah, the soundtrack is pretty good.
Ramen Djawadi.
Ramen Djawadi, yes.
Yeah.
Dude,
great composer.
I was very surprised when his name showed up. I don't know if this is before Game of Thrones, because I know Game of Thrones is when he really took off, but I love him. The Westworld soundtrack is sick. Game of Thrones soundtrack's not bad either, but yeah, he's great.
Fallout soundtrack, very strong.
Yeah, I forgot he did Fallout too. Gosh, dang.
Well, anyway, that's enough about ramen. And I'm afraid I might be mispronouncing his name.
I'm pretty sure it's Djawadi.
Well, I was thinking about, like, ramen, because it sounds like I'm saying ramen noodles.
Oh, I guess I don't know about that.
Well, anyway, I feel like we've been kind of I've been kind of dancing around it. It's time to talk criticism. Because I think that this movie is very simple, and at times that works to its detriment. And I think that is nowhere more apparent than in Iron Man / Tony Stark's character arc and in the character of Obadiah. So let's start with Iron Man, because I definitely get the sense that the cave is a come to Jesus moment. And there is clearly a fragility and a damaged nature, a damaged characteristic to him after that. But I have to say that I felt like he was not... It felt like he didn't really change as a character in the cave. It's more like his ideology and his worldview didn't change. It's just he received new information that he wasn't aware of. Like, he didn't stop, or this is my sense at least, he didn't stop making weapons because he thought it was the wrong thing to do. He stopped making weapons because he no longer believed that it was possible to keep them out of the wrong hands. And I did think that, like, okay, he stopped making weapons, and then he makes, like, one of the most powerful weapons on the planet at that time for a single person. And I think that that is mostly covered by just movie ethics. Like, movie ethics are incredibly simplistic. So the ramifications of that are mostly just stuff that I'm willing to let go, but there was a part of me that was like, he's just made a new weapon, and he can promise to not misuse it, but, like, why should we believe him? And I do wonder if maybe exploring that a little bit, that tension, or even just the question of whether or not he is the right person to be doing this, might have deepened his character. And just, there were some parts that were just a little bit clunky. This reporter that he's been kind of, has been in his orbit for a lot of the movie, at one point just, like, walks up to him at a party and hands him pictures of a place in peril to move him along. And I was like, that's lazy. That is and then storytelling. And also, what is she doing there? Did she think that he would be there? Because him going to that party is, like, the first time that he's been seen in public in months. So did she bring the pictures just on the off chance that he would show up and she could be like, hey, look at this? Yeah. And then I really did not like the scene where he has decided that he needs to learn more about Obadiah and his company. So he wants Pepper to do some sabotage. That's where we get the office scene from. And she refuses. She's like, I'm not going to help you kill yourself. And he says, like, there is nothing but this. There is just the next mission. And I was like, what? Where did that come from? Because he, at that point, he has gone full Batman. Like, that is something that Batman would say. But never in the movie did I get the sense that this had become so important to him that's his operating, that's kind of the way that he's looking at it. Because that's just such a serious, intense thing to say for a guy who is still going to parties and telling jokes and,
yeah.
Right, like, that thing works for Batman because it's made very clear at all times that that's just a persona. That Batman Bruce Wayne puts on the Playboy, does the Playboy thing, but he doesn't actually like any of it. That's not actually who he is. It does not work here because he clearly still is the Playboy. So the notion that he has become suddenly driven by this singular mission, I didn't really get. I didn't feel like somebody who's at that place probably would not spend the 5 hours waiting for their suit to be made going to a party, right? They would be doing more research on their enemies and doing more preparation and stuff. So that's not a huge deal. Like, I still thought it was a nice, satisfying character arc. I just thought, you know, it could have been better. And then things that I absolutely think could have been better is Obadiah, because I was not a fan of Obadiah here. First of all, what does he want? why did he, and maybe this is something that I actually missed, do you know why he put the hit out on Tony in the first place?
I think he, I mean, this is mostly in the subtext. I don't think anyone ever says it explicitly, but I think it's easy to believe that he felt a little like Tony had stolen the company from him since he was running it after Howard died. And he probably wanted to run the company again. Like, he probably wanted the company back, is what I would imagine was his motivation.
But what would he do with the company that Tony wasn't at that point?
Well, he could have more money and stuff. I don't know. People get nutty about possessing things.
Does he want more money? Is it ever implied that he's really hurting for cash, or even is just driven by overwhelming greed?
I don't know. He's evil. Like, you know.
Well, that's lame, Nathan. I that's not what I'm looking for.
Okay, I didn't write it. I don't know why you're talking to me.
Well, yeah, I'm holding you personally responsible. Yeah, so his motivations are always a little bit out of whack. And then by the time he's in the Ironmonger suit and he's saying things like, collateral damage, Tony, when he's throwing people's cars around, that's just, I mean, like, that's just cartoonish villainy that I was not interested in. And also, I feel like it was such a missed opportunity to not dive deeper into the betrayal aspect of that, because here is a man who has supposedly been a part of Tony's life for his entire life and has been kind of his mentor and father figure since he died, but there was never a point aside from when Obadiah says that he's been trying to crowd Tony out of the CEO position. There's never a point where I felt like the pain of the loss of that relationship, which applies a little bit to the guy in the cave as well, Jensen. Like, I thought it was weird that he never mentioned him again. He never really seemed to think about him again. I would put that in order of, like, problems. There's not mentioning Jensen. It's a minor problem. Iron Man's somewhat clunky arc. That's a little bit bigger. And Obadiah Stane, I would say that's a relatively significant issue for me.
Interesting. I don't really have those same issues. I agree with some of the stuff you're saying that, yeah, Obadiah Stane is kind of a cartoonish villain, but it is a comic book movie, and comic book movies are, you know, for children, so I don't really care. I think he's better than other MCU villains just because, like, he actually has some character, at least. He is intimidating. Like, he's not like the dark elf guy from Thor 2, who's just like a blank slate of nothingness.
We don't even know what his name is.
It's Malekith, the dark elf. I know what his name is.
Elden Ring stole his name for Malekith the Black Blade?
I don't know. Maybe there's like a historical basis for the name, like a shared.
There probably is.
Yeah. But I think Obadiah Stane is a bit of a one-dimensional villain, but it's not a huge deal for me. I do agree that there's pieces of Iron Man's character arc that are less fully formed than other ones. I don't think him. Sometimes you feel a need for the movie to do things that I think are a little silly for the movie to do. Like, I think the entire movie after Jensen dies is him doing stuff for Jensen. Like, my assumption, in the same way that I don't need to hear Spider-Man bring up Ben Parker every 10 seconds to know that him being Spider-Man is hinging on Ben Parker being, you know, the crux of that change. So that's not a huge deal for me.
Conversation with people, when he's defending his decision to stop making weapons, don't you think he would have mentioned him?
Well, I don't, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I just assume that the movie isn't showing me everything he did. Maybe he did say, you know, guys, here's the reason is because I met this fella whose family had died.
Nathan, you need to stop being so generous.
Why not? They're movies, you know? It's like being nice to a baby. Like, they can't help it.
They can help it, though, is the thing. Because movies aren't babies.
Anyway, the thing that bugged me about this movie was Pepper and Tony's relationship. Because, and this is not really anything to do with Gwyneth Paltrow. I think she's doing an okay job here. I think sometimes she gets a little more hate than she needs to for her acting. From me. Wasn't she the person I dissed?
Yes. You shut her down pretty hard in review of The Royal Tenenbaums.
Maybe I don't think she's that great of an actress. But I think this role is well within her ability as an actress.
Oh my gosh, you're making it worse.
But I just think the romantic tension that the movie is trying to develop between the two of them, a lot of the times just feels like awkward pauses, feels like people like leaving a really pregnant silence, but I don't really interpret that pregnant silence as, oh, we both have a lot of feelings for each other, and more of like both of the actors didn't know what line to ad-lib to get themselves out of this scene. And the fact that the movie kept returning to the Tony Pepper relationship didn't do much for me, especially since it doesn't really go anywhere. Like, by the end of the movie, it doesn't feel like they've reached the end of an arc together. They just help each other out, and then in the next movie, I think they're, like, dating or something. I don't know. But it just kind of frustrated me, and it felt kind of shoehorned in. It was a very far cry from, like, Peter and Mary Jane, or Captain America and whoever Haley Atwell is playing, Carter, Agent Carter. I can remember things.
That's one of the legendary romances of cinema.
I'm just saying they're a little more compelling than Pepper and Tony, in my opinion. And it was kind of annoying to me that we kept returning to it, as well as the movie's 2 hours long. And anytime a movie is more than 2 hours long, I'm a little more critical, especially if it's like an action movie or just kind of a popcorn movie. I'm a little harsher in terms of, did this need to be in the film? And since their romance goes nowhere, I would say it does not.
Well, I agree.
It could be short.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, or at least it could be shortened. Like, maybe it needs to be in here to set up them having a relationship in future, you know, episodes of the MCU.
But yeah, well, I agree. It's not great. It's kind of just there. And it's like so many of movie romances where precisely what they see in each other is unclear. Like, why would Pepper be attracted to this jerk?
Yeah. No, I agree. It's similar to, like, the romance in Driveaway Dolls, where it's like, you know this person is, like, a serial cheater and treats women in this way. Why are you into that? Like, do you... It's got big... like, I can change him energy, where they're like, I'm different. I know all these other women have failed. I can do it.
Yeah, well, two more quick things from me. One, for as much as I enjoyed the final fight between Iron Man and Iron Monger, I did not like the ultimate conclusion. First of all, because Iron Monger is whiffing shots from 20 feet away. And even, like, even he says, you ripped out my targeting computer. Apropos of nothing, he just announces that so the audience understands what's going on. And I could immediately think of better ways that that information could be communicated, that is.
Yeah. I really liked when he said, like, stop moving, you wriggly little souls. I was like, bro, he's not moving. What are you talking about?
He's not moving at all. He's completely immobile.
He's hanging onto a ledge.
Also, Iron Man's helmet comes off somehow, and Ironmonger crushes it with the absolute greatest of ease, despite having just had Iron Man in the bear hug of death and being unable to do the same thing. So is Tony Stark's body really so strong that that's what was keeping it? That's what was maintaining its structural integrity? Stupid.
Stupid.
But also, why does the arc reactor overloading work? Is it that it is just like melting Obadiah's face off? Or is it electrifying him? Because if it's electrifying him, why didn't it electrify Tony, who was actually hit by it?
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know how Iron Man survived that final thing. It seems like there's an initial burst of, like, an explosion that kind of blows Tony out of the way of the next charge of dangerous...
The sky beam.
Yeah, the sky beam. I don't know.
Well, I don't know either. But it was a disappointing end to the confrontation. Not so much that I ended up not liking it, but I was thinking, what's happening here? Why is he being zapped? Why is this working? And also, why can he not shoot Iron Man from 20 feet away, even without a targeting system? I wouldn't need a targeting system at that point, dude.
Yeah, I also don't know why he switched to missiles instead of the chain gun. I feel like the chain gun's got a much higher... I don't know. I have a lot of questions. What was Obadiah Stane's plan for after he killed Tony and Pepper? Like, was he going to say, yeah, they died in a tragic accident, and now check out this sick new suit that we can sell to the Taliban or whoever he was talking to?
Well, that's kind of out of the question, because a lot of people on that highway saw the suit.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, see, exactly. I don't know. My last thought is that the movie kept changing aspect ratios, and
it
really...
That's because it was filmed in IMAX. So those moments where, because the same thing happens with the Dark Knight trilogy, if you have it on Blu-ray, the moments where it's filling the screen entirely, those are the times where it would, on the IMAX screen, it would be opening up.
That's annoying. I think people should not make movies like that. That's an irritating way to make movies.
Christopher Nolan, I can guarantee you, is never going to stop.
But I feel like they've developed it. I think he just shoots everything in IMAX now, is what he's been doing.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't been on set on a Christopher Nolan movie in years.
Me neither. But that just, it bugged me.
Well, I thought it was kind of neat to see, like, the action sequences and on the whole screen. But anyway, the last thing I wanted to say, the special effect of Pepper reaching into a cavity that surely cannot exist when Iron Man was changing out his arc reactor cores, that was impressive. How'd they do that?
I don't know, because usually the way you would do that is have, like, a fake body. And
yeah, but his like arms were moving all around.
Yeah, and he's breathing, like, he's noticeably breathing. So I don't know how they did it. Maybe it's just like a trick sort of thing that they added. There's like a bit of an addition thing, and she just curled... we don't have video anymore, but she like curled her hand in such a way that it looked like she was sticking it further than she actually was. I don't know. It's movie magic. Like, that's the stuff I love, is when you see a shot and you're like, dang, how'd they do that?
Yeah, well, that was good. Let's rate it then. I'll go first. I think this movie is good. I think that the MCU got off to a strong start with this movie. I liked Iron Man. I liked RDJ. I liked pretty much all the characters except Obadiah. And performances were great across the board. Some really strong action sequences. It was just a fun, entertaining movie. And the only real problems showed up when it tried to, when its reach exceeded its grasp. Mm-hmm. And it was trying to make it more, it was trying to make something more of itself. Because those are the moments where the weaknesses of the script and of the characterization kind of shone through. But all in all, I would say this was a fun, enjoyable movie. I don't at all regret watching it. I'm going to give it a B.
I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. This is another classic 7 out of 10, I would say, that I really enjoyed this movie. I liked all the actors. I had a lot of fun. It took me back to days of watching Iron Man movies on FX back at home when everything was simple. It was great.
No, dude, you're right. That it did transport me a little bit, especially the after credit scene with Nick Fury. Man, it did take me back to wondering about the future of the MCU, wondering about Thanos. Yeah.
I don't even think we were like huge superhero fan, like huge MCU fans. I feel like I don't know what it was.
It's just fun to have like little bonuses that pique your imagination for what might be coming next.
Yeah, like Harry Styles showing up at the end of The Eternals.
Dude, that's... Oh my gosh, my imagination is running wild with all the possibilities.
Alright, well, anyway, let's get to recommendations. I'm going to recommend a movie. I think I've already talked about it. I might have recommended it for Captain America Civil War. But that's going to be, in my opinion, the most slept on MCU movie, and that's going to be Iron Man 3. I think it has a lot of the same strengths as this movie, specifically RDJ giving a great performance, as well as really creative and fun action set pieces. I mean, the concept of his suit being something that breaks apart, they really use that to the fullest extent, and there's a lot of great scenes of Tony requiring his intelligence and his mechanical know-how to beat the villains as opposed to being able to outstrength them. It's a ton of fun. I've been watching like clips of a bunch of the fight scenes recently, and I just think they're all so great. When he's got just the one repulsor hand and jet boot, and he's just got a gun, and he's kind of having to like fly around a little erratically, gosh, it looks so great. So my recommendation is going to be Iron Man 3. It also has, like, the same, you know, spoilers for Iron Man 3 here, but it's got, like, the same twist as this movie, which I thought was kind of funny that they did it twice.
What are you talking about?
That, like, the American...
What?
...person is behind the Ten Ring. That, like,
Oh.
Yeah. That someone is behind the terrorism that... Like, someone is trying to use the terrorism to further their own agenda.
Yeah, dude, that's another thing. The whole, like, terrorist angle of Iron Man 1, like, you would just... That's just not something you would see in a Marvel movie. Even when they tried to do it stupidly with the terrorists in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Like, it's still clearly a Marvel-fied version of terrorism.
Yeah. Well, this was a very, like, 2000s sort of vibe, I felt like.
Yeah, I think you're right. And also, the terrorist attacks scenes in Iron Man 3, to my memory, are quite chilling, because they are, again, very not Marvel-y.
Yeah, they're pretty out there. I saw Iron Man 3 in theaters the day it came out. That might have been the peak of my, like, MCU... excitement, was being inexplicably excited for Iron Man 3.
Well, anyway, that's enough about Iron Man 3. I guess I can second that recommendation, although it's been a long time since I've seen that movie.
Rewatch.
My recommendation is another one that's going to be pretty simple, because it's just, if you want to take your superhero game to the next level, then watch The Dark Knight. I mean, that's superhero movies, but better. Because it's got the spectacle, it's got the action, but in addition to that, it has it has the mind, right? The actual emotional and ideological conflict that superhero movies are so often lacking. And of course, the legendary performances from the likes of Christian Bale and Heath Ledger.
Yeah. We have reviewed that on the podcast, so if you watch it and want our thoughts, feel free to go check out that episode.
There you go. And if you want my thoughts on whether or not life is hard and full of disappointments, that's going to be a yes from me.
It's going to be a no from me. Life is hopeful and full of little joys.
Oh my gosh. Disgusting.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening to this episode. You know, how do you feel about the early MCU movies? Do you think we missed something in our appraisal of it? Send us an email if you have some thoughts on that. If you have a recommendation for a movie that you would like to see, send us an email. That's always in our description, both of the episode and of our podcast as a whole. We're going to be back next week with another episode. We're going to be reviewing a movie. We'll bring you the hard-hitting news of this day and age of the movie news that's coming out. So look forward to that, and we hope you have a great week.